back when I was racing, there were, you know, maybe five or six that had like true speed,
yeah,
and like and good technique and things like that. And now that number is growing, and now we're starting to see a lot of women racing that have all that. And then even in off-road, there's a, I feel like that's kind of where the demographic is right now for women riding, is like off-road scene. Like a lot of chicks have great speed.
Yep.
And so I'm hoping now that we'll kind of, once the speed is there, and then we'll see it kind of go to, into the jumps and like start tossing. Cause that's like what I'm excited to see, is like, I want to see that part of it grow, because obviously right now it is just me, but it doesn't have to be, you know, like there's the opportunities there. So hopefully, you know, we can see some other women capitalize on it.
I've definitely done the so hungover in Vegas trying to fly out. And you know, they have like the square, like,
yeah,
you
know, you're, like, I've been one of those persons.
One time I was there and I made it all the way to the security gate, and I just started drinking like leftover water bottles because I didn't know.
That is so gross, Danny. And on that accord, yeah, we're going to keep that in the show, but because we're already recording. But Danny, that is gross.
This,
you don't drink.
Pre-COVID, though.
That is still, you do not pick up random
still not
people's
cool
water bottles and drink them.
This was Vegas, man. It was a big weekend.
That's exactly a place you don't do it.
Was it? Yeah.
What was if there was like,
did you put your mouth on the bottle?
Oh, I was tongue in the.
All right. On that note, we're going to switch gears. Vicky Golden is in the house. Danny, you're good apart from... No, you're not good. You're not okay. You can't do
I'm
that.
Good.
You can't drink random water bottles that have been laying around.
At the airport, security check-in.
It was definitely one of my lowest moments. But I was also really hungover in Vegas.
Yeah, well, there you go. And, of course, Brittany Palmer, as always.
Hello.
And the logos are slowly starting to change around here. I don't know if people noticed, but... We finally, we got a mat, or what do you call this, a mat?
A cover?
A sheet?
Tablecloth.
Tablecloth.
It's a sheet.
It's a tablecloth. Sheet.
Sheet's the appropriate word, I'm going to.
It's not a sheet.
It's whatever it is,
but
it's very nice.
I've made it, Mom.
Yeah, and then Danny, there's going to be a new sign coming, and Danny, he won that one, so that is going to be his for decoration.
That's right.
El Cajon, is that how I say it?
Yeah. Some people say like El Cajon, which is cool too, but
That's like an Australian. If you ask Jacko, Jacko would be like, oh, you're from El Cajon.
Yeah, exactly. So growing up, I just heard El Cajon, but it's El Cajon.
Okay, I got it. El Cajon. Three X Games gold medals in women's Moto X 2011 through 2013. First woman to compete in Moto Best Whip at X Games with the bronze medal against the boys. That is really sick. Congratulations
Vicky
on that.
Vicky Golden, big deal, huh?
That's what people say.
They do. Because you continue to break barriers. 2008, Loretta Lynn's Amateur Motocross National Championships. First woman on Metal Militia. And then the trivia question is pretty cool. The trivia thing is 2019, you set the record for breaking motorcycle firewall during history's epic event through Evil Live 2, where you rode through 13 flaming boards during a live broadcast and beat, the last one was 12 on 2007. Whose idea was that?
Well, to be honest, like, it wasn't my idea.
Yeah.
I had different ideas. And we kind of just went back and forth with, like, History Channel and stuff, and this was kind of, like, the record, like, they wanted. And I wasn't going to say no, but, I just had different ideas, and that's kind of, like, what we settled on for a world record. And, just started going through walls on fire.
So that day was, I'm trying to remember, was it Travis Pastrana as well, or is that the day Axel was also trying to do the big air?
Axel was trying to do, I think, two different big air jumps and then set the world record for ramp to ramp as well.
Right. And then he did it, but it wasn't the day of.
Yeah, I think, dude, he probably did it a couple times, like practice leading up and stuff. Because obviously, like, his setup was right next to my setup since we were supposed to go same day.
Yeah.
And so obviously we were just kind of on this wild ride together and just watching him practice every day. And he crushed it, dude. He got, probably set the record a couple times and got comfy and just, I feel like it's so gnarly staring at that setup and just what he has to go through. And just, I think he just kind of like the wind kind of caught him just right, and he kind of like anticipated the land, but the fall from the landing is so different. Like for your visual, he probably like was setting up to land and realized like, oh no, I did it too early. And
yeah.
And then plus wind catching him just started looping him and dirty.
Gnarly. Like dirty. Actually went down. And then how do you practice for what you did?
Just go through some walls on fire and see him on the other side and just keep going.
Right. Yeah, so there's really no.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like you can't like with Axel, like you're all right, we'll set at 100, then 200 or like 150, 200, like just start baby step. And I like, we just add more walls.
Yeah.
So it was just like, you know, how many walls can we add for a day of practice? And obviously like the more I practice, the more material we go through. And like, so it just kind of became like a minimal practice and just like, it was like, quantity or quality over quantity, and just trying to like just utilize all the mistakes and make sure we learn each time, because we only have so much and so much time and so much material to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So we really kind of just started with a couple walls and then went from there. I don't think I did any more than like 5 or 8.
Yep.
And then it was just do the rest when we get there.
How far are the walls apart?
That's kind of like something we played with, of just seeing like how much time I would need to reset and with speed and like just kind of messing with that. But I think I went like around 30, 35 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we set them around, I think, like 6 to 10 feet apart, something like that. Just enough time to where it's not like mile apart, but still like, you know, still kind of close together. So we just tried to find like a happy medium with all that.
Is there a difference of like once you go through one, you're just kind of in it and it's like, I feel like if you set it too far apart, you're like resetting up. It looked like, I remember watching it, it looked like once you went through one, you were just kind of like, all right, I'm in it, like boom, 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 boom.
Pretty much. But there was also no out, because yeah, we made it to where it's just wood in the middle, but what's holding the wood up was like metal beams. So like there was no option for out really in between. So it was like, once I'm in, I'm in. And a couple times for practice, like 2 days before, a piece of wood got stuck like in my face, and it was just like the fumes were coming through my helmet, and I was like, I've still got like 5 or 6 more to go. And I'm just like, just, you know, when you get like, that, you know, you're sitting by a campfire and the wind hits you and you're just like, just can't, and you just end up turning away. Well, I just obviously had to keep my eyes open, so I'm just fighting to keep my eyes open, making sure I'm like in this, you know, little set area. So that one was kind of gnarly, and once we kind of figured out that was a big no-no to like just prevent that, is then we started to seal my helmet, because it was open underneath and all the seals and the vents were closed, but air and fumes and smokes were still getting through. So we ended up having all of it completely sealed. The Benny from Bell literally sat there and just super glued each vent, and then they had one of the off-road covers to go around and tuck into my suit. So then once the fumes were kind of out of the way, it was actually way much smoother sailing.
Yeah, wow. I didn't know all of that. And it doesn't say here, but is it it was the official Guinness book. Was that, were they there?
I believe so, yeah.
That's cool. So recently you had your documentary Inverted Perspective come out. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
And that's what you've been working on kind of lately, right?
Yeah, that was pretty much a year in the making, and that was still, you know, keeping, you know, my schedule with shows and races and everything that we had going on. It was just like, all right, flying real quick, do a couple film sessions for the documentary and bail out and continue on with my schedule. So yeah, it was like a year in the making of just trying to make everything fit and work and do everything and put all the pieces together. So
yeah.
It was a bit of a process, but I mean, I was stoked on the end result.
And then where was most of it filmed?
Most of it was filmed in California.
Yep.
805 sent out my filmer that was handling pretty much all of it. He came out to Imagination and filmed out there. And then most of it was filmed in California.
Cool. So let's take it back from the beginning. And I think like most, it's, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe the Aussies didn't, but like, to be a motocross, or especially freestyle motocross, you've probably been on a bike since you were a kid. So you started racing at 7.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, born into it, basically. But it's crazy because I feel like nowadays that's late. Like everyone's like 5.
It's crazy, right?
Latest. And now, you know, I started when I was 7. So I feel like nowadays, like that's a late start. But it's did the job just fine.
So then, like, it's like when you go to Loretta, that's like you just see it's these young kids that their families are like, and moto race families are pretty gnarly.
Oh, it's hectic out there at Loretta's, and I think it was cool. We got to go do some demos out there, and it's like midweek when we go do the demos, so it was just cool because we got to like. One, bring up the kids' spirit. Like, so many kids I talked to, I was like, oh, how'd you do? And he said, and they, you just see the look in their eye, and they just, like, their eyes drop. They're like, oh, not good. And I'm like, what do you mean not good? You're here racing Loretta Lynn's. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, how many people didn't make it here, you know? Like, that's what my dad always looked at when I was at Loretta's, and I had a bad motor. I didn't do good. It's like, he's like, imagine how many kids. You probably beat 40 or 50 kids just at the area qualifier and then probably another 60 kids at the regional. And then you made it here. So even if you get last place at Loretta's, like, you still beat a lot of kids to come here, you know? Yeah. So I think just running them through that and, like, seeing that, you know, light their eyes back up and, like, putting a perspective with them and then just getting to put on a jump show and, like, be there and, like, get them stoked on dirt bikes was pretty freaking rad.
Because your dad was your, like, mechanic, planner, kind of, like, ran the show back in the day, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he did it all, and he was, like, very, very meticulous with our bikes growing up, and he would sit there with, like, a toothbrush and just scrub them just to make sure they're, like, clean and ready to go. So we had a high standard to uphold.
That's so cool. And then there was an injury your dad had in an ATV as a kid?
Yeah, he actually – we were, like, a big dirt bike family, but there was a track day, and they let quads on that day. And it was just – he got tangled up with a quad, and it kind of, like – kind of Chad Reeded him off the side of the jump without his bike, and once he hit the ground.
That's a great analogy.
I mean, I wasn't there, but that's pretty much what the picture I got brought to.
Jeez.
So it was just a brutal crash, and he hit the ground, and he pretty much just was like just no feeling immediately, and got rushed to the hospital, and ended up being paralyzed from like the mid chest down, and I was like 11 or 12 when that happened.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, real crazy.
And because you're referring to Chad's crash on the outdoors, right? I still can't believe that he was able to.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, that's like pretty much what was told to me because I wasn't there, is that he just got hit in the back and then it just shot him off and he just bailed and just landed without a bike. I mean, but I think the only difference probably was Chad kind of caught like the downside.
He did catch a little bit.
And there was just no downside that my dad caught. So it's just. Just a brutal, brutal accident.
Yeah, that's crazy to have to, you know, even then grow up with that. And then even yourself, like, does that scare you, like, getting back on a bike or growing up, like, racing like that?
You know, if I was, like, any older, I think I would have, like, really put a realization of, like, what would have happened and how that happened. And, you know, like, it probably really would have affected me to the point where I probably would have quit riding. But I was so young and just, like, not really, like, you know, I was just too young to really comprehend what was going on. So it was just like, oh, well, dad's in the hospital and he doesn't feel good type thing. And I wasn't really just comprehending the severity of it. But, you know, he just never lost the passion for two wheels even after. He was just always wanted to go to the track with me, always wanted to talk about dirt bikes. Yeah. And he would just, his face would light up. So I'm like, if something that bad can happen to you and the cause of it still makes you happy, then, you know, there's something to be said about these two-wheel machines.
Yeah, for sure. And when was the moment for you where you went from racing to freestyle? And, like, when was that kind of transition? And was that hard for him, for you to say, hey, I'm going to stop racing?
Yeah, because we are actually a huge race-hearted family. And I remember when I was young, my brother wanted to do, like, freestyle and stuff. And he secretly cut his fenders.
No,
and
he didn't.
Oh, yeah. And that was back when it was, like, prime to do that. And my dad was like, absolutely not. We're taking those off, and you're putting real plastics on, and you're paying for them, and we're never running those. So he was, like, anti-freestyle back in the day. But that was back when a freestyle had, like, a terrible rep. Everyone was just, like, partying, psychopaths, and just, like, occasionally riding dirt bikes and just sending it. So, like, it was just – it was a brutal era to try and, like, have those guys, like, be your mentors too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, like, the most ideal situation.
I mean, look how Twitch turned out.
I know. It's tricky.
That's like the Krusty Demons era where you're like, what, that's what you want to be?
Exactly. Like, there's no parent that would be, like, supportive of that and be like, yeah, you want to grow up to be Twitch? sure?
And now it's probably the opposite, where people are like, all right, let's get this double flip.
Yeah.
And they're like so young, you know?
Yeah, and it's sick though too, because like I think, you know, Jeremy especially, and like we followed that suit, is that we like actually care about like what our dirt bikes look like, how our kit is, like,
yeah,
we like take it to a level of like we want to look as good as we possibly can and bring like an appeal that not even racers can really do, you know?
No.
So, and that's like something different that he's brought on board that we've all followed suit with.
Yeah, well, and you guys ride together every day.
Sometimes.
Well, not every day. Yeah, but it's like you guys spend...
he's lazy.
Oh, yeah.
He is lazy.
Not so much lazy, but he's a big golf guy.
Yeah, I know. He's hitting me up for golf sponsorships right now. That's what he's worried about. Yeah.
I like how you say that about the kits, though, because that was like a big thing that he kind of like mentioned when he was on here, really talking about like how he wants everything to match and feel a certain way, right?
Yeah, and I feel like it used to be like the racers used to do that a lot, and now like they're just so like just pounding out motos and like just putting in repetition that it's like, oh well, whatever gloves are dry, whatever like goggles I have, like, and it's just like they just have to go through stuff, and to where we're like, nah, we want to look good, like this will match this, and like even like before shows we'll like be like, oh, what do you think about this pants with these jerseys, and like we just literally sit there like little girls in the closet and pick out our kids.
But you guys have like it's even into like fashion, or it's more so like rap culture. But like people wear like the rappers wear like motor, like you're free, they wear your gear.
No, it's
kind of
cool
funny
that dirt bikes are like in right now.
Yeah, it's like it's super sick. In. It's like it's a part of a whole separate kind of culture. But when you look at it, the helmet, the design on the helmet with the jersey and the pants and the boots, it's kind of fucking sick.
Yeah, dude, it's so cool. And like even down to like getting to like coat our bikes, like Cerakote them or powder coat them or whatever you want to do. Like it's cool that we get to be different. Like I came out and I was like, I don't want to do black. I don't want to do gray. Like, everyone's doing that. So I came out with, like, this, like, burnt bronze frame and, like, started running that. So it's just cool that, like, we can really, like, get creative with just about anything and, like, just have that, like, you know, crafty little, like, mentality with us to, like, create something along the way of just having our style be a little bit different.
Right. What would your bike look like, Brittany?
It would probably have, like, paint splatter all over it. I don't know. I would like paint it. I'd probably hand paint my bike.
Right?
Yeah.
She's actually like, really a painter. You'd like, I could see you doing like a sick mural, right?
Yeah.
I think there would be some flowers in there.
Maybe some like little mushrooms like popping up. I don't know.
Okay.
Butterflies.
Well, we went there quick.
Yeah. She's already got it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. No, I'm just like, the wheels are turning. I don't know.
So 2008, you won Loretta. Probably, something that, you know, your father, that was probably a big moment for him.
Yeah, he was so stoked. And, like, we actually, that year he got hurt, we actually qualified to go to Loretta's together. And he ended up getting hurt and wasn't able to go, obviously. And I still went and raced. And that was just, like, that's, like, the Olympics of our, like, amateur sport. So, like, to be able to go do that and come away with a win, like, that was huge, especially on our program where, like, my bike wasn't even running that well half the time. Like, we were just on, like, a low, low budget program of just like, let's hopefully like this bike stays together running. And that was like just a challenge on its own, is just to have the bike running, because something was wrong with it. We couldn't figure it out and didn't have any money to figure it out. So we just were like hoping and praying that it would stay together, and somehow it did. And I was still able to win too.
Yeah, that's crazy. So when was the transfer like into the freestyle world?
So for me, it was I raced Supercross a couple years, and both years I developed Epstein-Barr, which is like overtraining syndrome, and just dug myself a big hole for like physically, and just like couldn't really do it. And then felt like I was better and raced the second year, and it just hit me just as hard. And so I was like, well, if I can't do this like at the level I want to do it, like at 100% and go all in, then I feel like I was just ready to take a step in a different direction. But I was like, I'm not going to quit and never ride dirt bikes again. So I think freestyle was like the outlet for me to be able to do that. And during like all my racing, I was you know, I was still friends with like Jeremy and Todd Potter and Matt Byton and all those guys that were riding a lot in SoCal at the time. And my like off days of riding Supercross and pounding out laps and just that relentless, brutal program, like I'd take a day off and just go hit ramps with them and go have fun at like Fitzpatrick's house and stuff. And that was like my day off of just like relax and have some fun. And they were always just poking at me like, oh, why don't you just go do shows? You'll make so much money. You'll do all this. And like, and I'm like, nope, I got goals in racing. I'll do that after. And I knew that racing is like something you do and like you're young and ready and healthy. And once I kind of lost the health aspect, I'm like, all right, well, it's time to cut some plastics up and cut the seat down and start doing grabs and be a freestyle rider for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, a little bit. Ended up being a long bit.
Yeah, it did.
It's definitely a bit of a boys club, but, you know, and it's you know, action sports has definitely come a long way in you know, skateboarding and whatever else, snowboarding, skiing. And but it still seems like, you know, you're kind of the only girl that is on a professional level that can do what you do. Why do you think that is?
Man, I think it just kind of comes down to my upbringing. Like, I grew up riding in the hills. Like, we didn't even have tracks to go to. We couldn't afford to go to the tracks to go ride, so we would just go out in the hills. So, like, and it's brutal just going out and riding in the hills. Like, you just develop bike skill, and I think that's kind of where it started into. And then just kind of pushing the envelope on tracks and things like that and just starting to develop more of, like, a technical riding style. And that's where I felt like I was the most comfortable is just the techie stuff. And then that's what I kind of transitioned into arena cross and supercross and just techie stuff. And then it went into tricks and stuff like that. So I just developed it. And it just, I guess, where my taste buds went, it was just like, you know, that's where all these guys were already kind of at. So just to be able to like ride with them and develop those skills. Like, I think my favorite thing about it is like, you know, my girl card got revoked from them a long time ago. So, like, they hold me to their standards. So, like, if I'm riding like shit, Jeremy would be like, what's your deal today? Like, he's never told me that, like, oh, you're doing so good. Like, I got to earn that, you know? So, like, it's just good because, like, they really hold me to that standard. And it's not like, oh, well, I think you could maybe do, like, this jump. Like, it's never looked at like that. It's like, well, if Axel or Tyler or any of those boys go and jump something, they're looking at me like, are you ready? Like, there's no option. So I think, you know, having them, like, be, you know, that good of friends to really, like, push the envelope and trust me that I'm capable is, like, kind of the fuel to my fire of, like, well, if they know I got it, then I got it.
Yeah.
So, like, let's go.
You know what's crazy is I, you know, obviously been watching your X Games and been a lot of your demos, but we went on that one trip where we camped, like, right during, like, during COVID. Yeah, the session, the last time we had you on the podcast.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is like at jump set up there was like that core, like that quarter into that like hip type thing.
Yeah.
She's the first one out there hitting all the jumps. And I was just like, oh shit. Like, it's not like, oh, like she's out there like on her bike. Like, then I was like, oh, like, yeah, I get it. It's like you're not scared.
No. And I think because like I am around all these gnarly dudes and I know like it would set me apart to jump stuff first and before them, which is not easy because they are like, they're just extreme 12-year-olds just ready to like go at any moment. Like, they're just like pushing it to like whenever they get the green light, they're going.
Yeah.
So like it's really hard to like beat them to it. So I kind of see it as a challenge. Like, if I can beat them to it, I'm gonna. It doesn't always happen, but when it does, like, I'm stoked because it's not easy to do.
No.
I think it's pretty cool too, like how, you know, you go from this background of racing where it's like very competitive and everyone's trying to like almost get this like leg up and, you know, be a little bit more like, you know, kind of not letting people in or accepting in a way. But then you go to like freestyle motocross where it's like the most baddest bad boys there is, but they're like pushing you and like bringing you in to like really like grow with them and to really like excel.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just to have like those guys like do that. It's just, it means something. It's a really special thing to me to be able to come from where I've came from and then have them support me like that. It means a lot. And sometimes I need it. Like, I'll literally look at Jeremy, especially like at Imagination, where I just like, he probably has no clue how fast to hit something, or he might think so, but all he has to do is be like, yeah, you got it. And that's all it takes, and I just go do it. You know, like, you just need like those types of friends to just push you just that little bit, And just around all those dudes, it's like never ending. So it's like once you get one, they're already on to the next. So you do it again, and then you're on to the next. So you do it again. So it's like, dude, you just like never catch a break. So it's just like you got to just keep pushing to stay with them. And sometimes it's just a wild ride to just be around those dudes.
Do you think that there was ever a point earlier in your career where maybe, you know, that factor of like, you know, now you're running with the boys and you're on their level, but was there a point when you were like, oh, shoot, there's a lot of guys around here? Like, what was that transition to where you're like, you know what, I'm just as good, I'm just the same, like, we're all, was there ever an insecurity as being a girl young and in this?
Yeah, I still, yeah. I mean, even, you know, to this day, I still get that feeling of like, oh, I don't know if I belong. Like, you know, that's gnarly. But I feel like everyone kind of does it. Like, you know, there's not one person, like, especially like when we go to the places with just these big jumps that they're not like, oh, I know how fast to go. Like, I got this. Like, besides like Axel and Tyler. After that, then everyone else is kind of in the same boat. So it kind of like it's a little bit more settling to know that like everyone's kind of in the same boat. And I'm like, I've been used to being like the underdog. And I feel like when I raced Supercross, I definitely felt like I don't belong. I didn't feel comfortable. And I was just really struggling with the time frame that they were giving out. You know, like you get like 3 15-minute practices in Supercross. And like flat out, that wasn't enough time for me.
Yeah.
So I made do with like the best that I could do, but it just wasn't enough for that circumstances. And I think that kind of really taught me just to like pull the trigger immediately and like trust your gut and develop that like timing per se, because I really like, I just didn't quite have that. And I really just hesitated too much. And now that I'm like where I'm at, I know like my gut is 90% of the time it's right. So just trust it and go.
Isn't it funny though, like in something like that, and from our world of snowboarding, you know, when they'd build a 60, 80-foot jump, sometimes they got bigger than that. It's your gut. You got to trust your gut, because when you pick the speed and you're guinea pigging, essentially, you better fucking have your gut. Your gut better be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I was curious about, like within, you know, your process of like figuring out the speed for like a jump you haven't hit, because I always like felt like it was almost like a roller coaster a lot of the first time you hit these jumps. Oh, you get that feeling and you're like up top, okay, like this is kind of scary, and then you're super happy when it's over.
Yeah,
but like for you, could you describe like a little bit of like finding the speed and watching to
I mean, ultimately it's a guess. Like there's no way around it. Like you're guessing. It's just that how much time you spent on the bike. And I'm like a really like if I'm on the bike a lot and I'm just getting bike time, no matter what kind of, if it's track, trails, any like jumps, anything, like I just need to be on the bike to feel comfortable. And some guys can just hop on and go and they're like, oh, I feel rusty, but you can't even tell, they look the same. And they're just like unicorns in that scenario. But I just need like time. So if I have that time, then I get the confidence that goes with it. And then my guess would probably be the same whether I've taken 6 months off or 6 days or 0 days. But because I have confidence in my guess, that I'm like, all right, like trust it. And that's kind of like where I set myself up too, is like I go to new places and I don't rely on anyone. And I just trust my gut and see where that takes me. And like I said, 90% of the time it works out well.
I feel like that's good advice for like anyone in any industry, right? Like really like trusting yourself, because your higher self is what's speaking to you through this whole process, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like when I went to Imagination, that was kind of like personal goals I set for myself. I'm like, the year before I really relied on Tyler a lot, which wasn't bad. I mean, those are big jumps to do on your own. And the previous year I was just like, you know what, like Tyler's got a lot going on and there's a lot of people like trying to get on his back wheel. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to, like, I want to do this on my own. And I still followed him off a couple things, but it was just like, I need to do this and figure it out by myself. Yep. And that's kind of like the goal I set. So I was really stoked to like find lines on my own, find jumps on my own, do them on my own. And that was just like a huge like personal goal for me to like check off.
Yeah. Why do you think Tyler and Axel, and you've spent a lot of time with both of them, like, where do you think that comes from for those two?
I don't know. Like, Tyler has the most unbelievable timing I've ever seen, like, in my entire life. No one has timing like him. And he's gone out to Imagination 3 years in a row now and jumped everything, and I've seen him case maybe one thing.
Crazy.
So I just don't get it.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm wondering, because I hear like sometimes where people will be like, all right, second gear full. And then so what's the difference between like speed, or, you know, between like, how do you know, okay, second full? Like, does that mean from here to here you hit second and you're going full, or do you just get to there? And like, what is the difference in the sense of like distance mean?
Dude, it's kind of crazy. And I think that's why like it helps too to be riding with a lot of these guys, because everyone hits stuff differently. You know, you have one guy that comes in super, super slow and then goes second gear full at the bottom. Or you have some guy that might come in even like second cruisy and then a little bit less off the bottom. So like things are changing, like, you know, the way you can hit something. So it's really like, it's hard to take in account if you don't know the rider. So it's kind of nice to be able to ride with these guys and see that, because Tyler is like, he'll come in as slow as possible. So I know I got to give him some room, because he's about to like let it all loose. And Axel's pretty, he's kind of like a carry speed type, and then still give it. So like, it's just really nice to know the style. So if you do have to lean on someone, or you do listen to them go, that you're like, okay, like, I know how they hit it, I know how I would hit it. And then you kind of just do that weird math in your head and go.
Yeah. What's like one of the scariest like tricks you've had to overcome, or like biggest jump where you're like, fuck, I don't know why I'm here right now, but I got to get through this.
Yeah, that'd probably be my no-handed front flip for X Games Real Moto. Yep. I don't know. It was one of those things where I had the trick and I did it so much into the foam pit to where I just wanted to create like muscle memory for it. And thankfully I did that. And when it came time to like actually film it and, you know, build the landing and do that part of it, of like basically landing it to dirt and doing the actual filming part of it, I had already put two fractures in my back, and then I broke my right wrist and my hand in two places into the foam pit. And I was already kind of just crutching along at this point, just to try and get something on, you know, on camera, just to like finish the project. And we started rolling out the landing bag, and I did one to the landing bag, and it just bounced me off. And I already had I was already protecting my right arm because it was already mashed to pieces. So
yeah.
I just went to put my left one out, and then it broke my wrist on that side. And so I just immediately hit the ground. I knew, I'm like, what do I do? Like, I did it perfect, but the bag bounced me off. So the only logical thing I could think of was just to say, screw it, pull the bag. And I was just like, you know, like, we have to.
Take it to dirt.
Yeah.
Dang.
I'm like, I did what I had to do. The bag just messed me up. So I'm like, I just like had that in my head. I'm like, I did everything right. The bag messed me up. So just do everything again and you'll be fine. But now I just have like two useless arms. So I took into consideration, like, I couldn't put the bike on the stand, I couldn't pull in the clutch to even like do anything, because it was a fresh break. So I taped it up, and once they finally pulled the bag, I just was like, all right, well, I can't under rotate it, because in order for me to under rotate it and fix it, I have to pull in the clutch and hit the brake to speed it up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, well, you can't be under, because that's not an option, because I won't be able to pull in the clutch. So I just went in and I hit it. And I remember like looking at the ramp and be like, man, I'm like 2 hours from a hospital, but we're going to do this anyways, because there's cameras. So I'm either going to get the shot and land it, or we're going to get a sweet crash for X Games Real Moto.
Which are also pretty cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, those are my two options. So I just went for it, and just like remember letting go and looking at the landing, and I was so terrified. I was like, I just let go, and I tucked back under, and I'm like, oh, I did it too fast. So I just tried to open up and give it a little bit and open up, and I just didn't have like any like strength in my arms to hold my body weight up. So I literally just slammed down so hard. I broke my front number plate with my face, and just was like, God. I just remember, do not let go of the bike. And somehow I just like got a little squirrely, rode it out, and I'm like, we're done.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're done filming for the day.
Yeah. Oh my God. I can only imagine how you like go into the hospital to get your wrist fixed, and they're asking you how you did it, and they're not even knowing what you did after you broke your wrist.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
You're like, well, I first hurt this, and then I hurt this, and then I went back, but I got it. So
don't worry. Yeah. Then I landed the conflict.
I got the shot.
I got the shot.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Are you at this point? I feel like in your field, you guys are just used to going to the hospital.
Honestly, we don't even go to the hospital anymore. You just call your doctor. Like we're like.
Really? They're just like, just take a photo.
Yeah, send it in. Like, you know, like, oh, sweet, thanks. You ruined my Friday afternoon because I got to come help you. And like,
do you guys all use the same doctor?
A handful of us do. Yeah. Like, when I did my like, bad injuries with my foot and my ankle back in like 2018, I had the same guy that did like JG's ankles and put Anderson's like when Anderson had that crash at Glen Helen. Had to get his like toes put back on or whatever. We have the same foot and ankle specialist, and then thankfully I think a lot of us use like the same shoulder and knee guy. So yeah, like, yeah, it's pretty similar. But yeah, thankfully like we kind of have them just like on speed dial, which is very nice to have because like, I mean, you don't like they pretty much are like, oh, what'd you do?
Yeah, exactly. Right, cool. Which like, one of it was them?
Yeah, like it's pretty much like we know we gotta fix it and fix it right and fix it now. So like they're just like just call me when it happens and like let me know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we'll fix it from there. So it's just like, yeah, it's kind of nice to have them just like at our fingertips because we kind of need them.
Right. All right, we're gonna try something new here. We've never done this.
Oh,
we're going to do a true or false.
Yep.
So the format of the show, you tell us the statement is true or false and why. Brittany, you on it? Do you want to hit the first one on A there?
Yeah, let's do it. It says, a lot of women's sports just give out a girl card to their writers. Is this true or false and why?
I think that's like a double bogey on that one. I think it's true from the outside looking in, false from the inside looking out.
Yeah, wow, there you
good
go.
Good answer.
All right. Motocross provides important lessons to the rest of your life, true or false?
True.
Well, and why?
Absolutely true. I mean, if you like kind of look at it, like it's a sport that really requires everything. Like you got to be really like just disciplined, determined, and like just have like pure grit. I mean, yep. there's everything that you can apply to real life. So absolutely.
All right. I got a true or false here. You need some degree of self-destruction tendencies to be good at action sports. True or false?
Yeah, I think that's true. A lot of people ask like, oh, you must be so brave. I'm like, no, we're just really stupid. We make bad decisions.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah.
For a living.
Day, yeah.
And we love being dared.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I dare you. Wait, yeah. What?
Yeah. The best thing you could say to someone is, you won't.
Yeah.
You won't do it.
You won't.
Oh, they will.
Is there some trick that you're working on now? Is there something in your head that is like you want?
Yeah, for sure. I started flipping 75 and just kind of put that on the back burner and just kind of looking to just kind of clean it up and fix it from there. And I had like good consistent flips and then just kind of lost it and had a string of injuries and then tried to go back and re-injure myself. So just trying to get that back on lock. And yeah, I have another trick that I'd like to do before my career is over, but I don't want to speak too much about it.
Yeah,
so
no, I get that.
Just I like to just show it instead of talk about it.
Yeah,
so.
I like that. So X Games 2011, and this was kind of, I think it's 2011, maybe I'm wrong there, but X Games Los Angeles was when you were invited to do Best Whip. I believe, is that the one where you got third? Maybe not.
It might have been 12 or 13.
Okay, anyway,
one of them years sure,
but you did it on the 250. Were the rest of the guys were on bigger bikes?
Yeah, everyone's on 450s. It's pretty much the standard for freestyle or you know, that type
everyone's,
of stuff.
Yep.
And back then I was still racing like the women's Moto X and that was only a 250 only category.
Yep.
And that's all I had was 250s. So when I got the invite, you know, I just continued to practice on the 250. That was the only bike I had at the time. And it was not a last minute invite, but not enough time to like fully reinvent the wheel and hop on a 450. So I just did it on a 250 and that was tough. It was it was back when I was in the Staples Center too. So we had a tight arena and I remember they were like, well, we set it at like 72 feet and it was just a tight run in. And I knew like everybody else wanted it pushed back and I was going to be like, I was that guy type thing of yeah. like, I can't, like I physically can't go any faster to make it. And I was just like getting over it and like just kind of like stretching it just to get over it because it was so tight. I was just like motoing the corner and then like getting into it. So I was just like, I'm going to have to be that person to say no, because I just physically can't make it. And then let alone whip, like it's one thing to just make the jump and like give it everything. And then to whip off of it, it robs distance. So it was just one of those things where I was like, dude, I can't say yes. I'm like, I can't make it. And yep. I felt bad because everyone's on 450s just going flat and into the corner. And that was like the same year Hanny threw like the biggest whip known to man.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just cool to like be out there and experience it all because it was just so gnarly. I remember like halfway through, I'm just like, don't look up. Don't look at the screen and see where I'm at. Just keep focusing and riding. And I think like 3/4 of the way through, I took a peek up and I seen my percentage. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, I shouldn't have looked because I think I was in like second and I started freaking out. And I was like, no. I was like, just like losing my mind. I'm like, that can't be right. And then I just like, I lost it from there. I just like choked up and like panicked. And then Hanny threw that big one and put himself in the lead as he should have.
Yeah.
But yeah, somehow I still like squeaked out with a third somehow. It was insane.
And then that was the heyday of it too. Staples Center, RIP to the Staples Center, now the Crypto, but like when X Games was in LA and at the Staples Center, it was like, it was a big deal. It was huge.
Yeah, it was so cool to be able to say like I got to race and like compete in the Staples Center like in that era, because like you said, it was like, that's when it was in its prime, and it was just such a cool experience to be when it was, you know, I like my first year was in the Coliseum racing.
Yep.
And I didn't get to go in the Staples Center, and the second year we went inside the Staples Center. It was just so surreal.
Yeah.
It was pretty special. I mean, even for like just being a spectator, I remember it because, you know, you watch a lot of these sport events and you're always just staring down.
Yeah.
And I feel like with dirt bike especially, it was like you'd watch them come up to like your level, like in the middle of the stadium and yeah. then like drop back down.
So it was like... so special because it was just like it kind of sucked for being a rider because it's such a tight stadium to be able to like work in that small little zone. But for a fan, like yeah, I remember just walking in through the stands to see it all, and you're just like blown away because it's like no matter where you sit is a good seat
yeah.
because it's all so up close and personal.
Yeah.
So it was just like such a cool experience to be a part of it in that like center.
Yeah, because back in those days, and I think even though that year, we all know that I'm not good with years. But we would do the old radio show we did with Sirius XM, and we would be up in the top.
Yeah.
And then we were there for while you guys were practicing and whatnot. And we're in the top, like we're in almost the roof of the Staples Center, and it's a great view.
Yeah, everything.
It's not
a great
like
view.
Too big, if that makes sense. Where if you're in like an outside football stadium or something, yeah. You can have a bad seat, but something like that. And that was even cooler. I remember. Deegan and Feist, you guys were like all practicing, and it was just me, Deegan, Feist, and Alice watching you guys like live on radio talking shit in the Staples Center. It's kind of a surreal moment, you know?
Yeah, and like back then it was like every year going there, so it was just like something we did.
Yeah.
And now that we haven't been there, you get to look back and it's just like such a special moment in action sports now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we'll get back to some capacity like that, but hopefully sooner than later. So you obviously spent a lot of time riding with the boys, and the women's side of freestyle motocross. Not that it hasn't taken off, because I think it's one of those things, and this is more of a question to go to you, but like, do you see, like, what's the future of it for like women's freestyle motocross? Do you see it growing, or do you see it just kind of being where it's at now?
Man, it's tough because I feel like it is growing, maybe not in, you know, the freestyle or free ride side of things, but it's growing. You know, back when I was racing, there were, you know, maybe 5 or 6 that had like true speed
yeah.
and like and good technique and things like that. And now that number is growing, and now we're starting to see a lot of women racing that have all that. And then even in off-road, I feel like that's kind of where the demographic is right now for women riding is like off-road scene. Like a lot of chicks have great speed.
Yep.
And so I'm hoping now that we'll kind of, once the speed is there, and then we'll see it kind of go into the jumps and like start tossing. Cause that's like what I'm excited to see, is like, I want to see that part of it grow, because obviously right now it is just me, but it doesn't have to be, you know, like there's the opportunities there. So hopefully, you know, we can see some other women capitalize on it.
But if I can be honest right now, like if I was a girl and looking at you, I just wouldn't even do it. And then not only that, it's like it's a sport that if like freestyle motor, if you go down, it's like it's not when you crash. It's like, oh, well, that's a broken bone. That's a broken bone. It's like it's not the most psychologically like thing. You're like, all right, I want to get into this. And then to even go one step further, look who you're riding with. It's like no other person's going to be able to be like, oh, I just got back from Jeremy's house, or I'm out with Tyler Bierman, or I'm like, you know what I mean? Like it's like a once. I think that's you, and that's it, because nobody gets that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a tough opportunity, especially like when the ball's already rolling, and if you're not like on that train to just continue on, then yeah, it's definitely going to be tough. But I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's a tough sport to get into because there's so much, there's not a lot of easy ways for even us to like teach it either.
No.
Because I mean, the business side of like liability and insurance, like that just all goes like absolutely not, like it's too dangerous. So it's hard for even us to like help give access to it, you know, to like really help and like let the ladder down to a younger generation, because like liability wise and like legally, like we can't.
Yeah.
So yeah, like you don't want to be liable for someone getting hurt.
Yeah. Cause we've tried in the past and like talked to Trax about it, and it's just like, it's an absolute no. So like it's definitely tough to like create the opportunity, but yeah, dude, it just makes it tough. I wish there was like more, but at the same time, it makes my job pretty easy when you can't really get anybody else either.
Sure.
I'm sure like definitely, it'll go almost like within the next generation, right? Like I'm sure there's a handful of, you know, 5 to 10 girls who are looking up to you, and even, you know, some of these younger parents being like, there is no limit. Like I've watched, you know, you crush the limit so many times that like they're going to influence their kids, and these young ones are going to see it and be like, I'm going to double flip that 75er.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's the best way to look at it, is that, you know, like I've created at least maybe not opportunity, but there's no excuse to not do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least I can help with that.
Because even think about this. I remember when X Games let Murray in, the guy that did the double backflip, I'll send it in the video.
Yeah.
And then he did the double backflip, and then the next year they brought him back, and I think maybe it was a front flip. I could be wrong again, but mm-hmm. he almost died, and it was like, all right, like there's a reason why the people that you have of that era and are there. It's not some guy sends in a video that can be crazy and get it done, because they brought him back again, and he literally almost died, like at a live event, and it's like, well, there's a reason why does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. And there's something to be said about like the level we compete at, because not a lot of people understand that, one, like we train to create, like I said earlier, is like muscle memory. Like I did the front flip probably 50, 60, 100 times more than I like really had to. But if something goes wrong, there's a split second to where you have to correct it, and you can't sit there and be like, oh shoot, okay, I think I'm over rotating. What do I do to fix that? Like it has to be muscle memory to just do it.
Yeah.
There's no thinking about what's going on in the trick. You just have to do it, correct it, and be done, because that's the only way to do it. And that's why I did so many, is because I needed muscle memory to be able to correct it. And the split second that you think about it is already too late. So it, with that being said, you know, I think we take it to such a level to be able to do that. And then what a lot of people don't understand when you're competing is like at like X Games per se, is like they tell you when to go. You don't get to choose when you go.
Yeah, you're on live TV.
You're on live TV.
In the gate, like, all right, cool, go, stop, don't go. Oh, commercial. Sit there for 3 minutes. Like, yeah. You're like, my energy, and I was ready to go 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, and like I've been in scenarios where they rush you to staging and you're like, shoot, where's my gloves? Where's my stuff? I gotta go.
Yeah.
And then they rush you all the way there. Like, oh, hold on, we got a 8 minute wait for a commercial. You're like, well, I was just fully ready. Like, I was like, you rushed me here, and like, you just like go into a panic because you're just trying to like, you know, fit the schedule. And then they like, all right, hold on. So like, it's something like when you come in new and not prepared for that, it's gnarly.
Yeah.
Like it's insane to think, and we've kind of grown like accustomed to being able to just, okay, it's time to go. And yep. like even like for shows that we do, it's like, okay, well, we're not doing practice. We don't have time in our in the schedule. You just have to go out first trick or first jump and do a trick. You haven't even jumped the setup and we have to do a trick and just do it both at the same time. And that's just kind of like what you develop in your brain is like, okay, like it just you kind of become numb to it because you've done it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy. It's yeah. I think the lot of you are crazy on that side. It's
we're borderline psychopaths.
I did like what you said earlier though about you know the boy Twitch and they're just a you know a pack of 12-year-olds.
Yeah, I was literally talking about with Jeremy this morning. I'm like we're like physically probably 90, mentally 12, and then you just add you're somewhere in the middle of that because like that's just how it averages up with so many injuries. You just wake up, you can't even walk in the morning, and then you just like you laugh when someone farts. So like, just like
I don't think that ever stops. I saw two guys walking down the street one time and they were like in their 70s and one of them farted and they both looked at each other and started laughing.
Yeah, it never stopped. Like you just and that's like what I'm surrounded with. Like they're like, "Oh, what's it like being around all these like these dudes?" I'm like, "They're literally 12-year-old boys." Like mentally they do not excel 13.
So funny.
But I don't think I do either cuz I still laugh just the same.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we love you here at Monster. Before we finish, we try and do this lightning round. Brittany, is there anything you want to say before we go?
Well, I always love to ask this question. You know, when you're getting injured or you're feeling maybe like not enough or afraid or like what, how do you persevere in what you do? Because it really takes, like you said, I mean, you, what you guys called yourselves, but I think it takes a certain kind of, you know, gumption to do it. But why, like, how do you keep going forward? And like, what advice would you give to the younger generation of girls that want to do this and like maybe want to give up when they hurt themselves? Or like, what would you tell them? Or what would you tell your younger self, really?
Yeah, I mean, we've all been through of injuries, especially as like, I mean, I went through an injury to where like almost lost my foot and ankle, like what was, you know, borderline about to lose it. And I like was literally like, all right, well, I'm not gonna ride anymore, like I quit. And yep. I'm like, okay, well, I still can't walk. So yeah. I got to go through the process of walking. And I'm like, and then once you can actually walk, you're like, all right, well, I can ride. So like, it really doesn't change anything. Yeah. Like you just kind of like everybody goes through it. Like it's just a process. It's part of the process.
You're like, well, this walking kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's just, I like that. It's part of the process. Everyone goes through it. You're not alone. It's something everybody experiences that you probably do quit. But by the time you actually get walking or back to like using the limb that you broke or whatever it is, you're like, oh shoot, like this works. I could twist the throttle.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just goes away. So like it's just part of the process, unfortunately, and it comes with the territory. And it's not if you crash, it's when you crash. So take it with a grain of salt. And I think you see that a lot even in a lot of like pro racers when they do their like we've seen it in Supercross so much and then the rider gives their update of after their injury and they're not like just completely devastated, like as they should be, but they're like calm and collected and be like, yep, I did this, it happens, we had surgery, we're back on the road to recovery. Like it's just part of it.
Actually brings me to another point that I saw Pete Fox post something about just where racing's at right now. And this is a really good question for you, but like, I guess like out of the top five riders, three of them are hurt right now. And there's a lot going on and I was in Nashville at the race and I saw Anderson's crash and I saw it's kind of gnarly. Is there a point to where these tracks are they're making these guys, should they dumb it down a little, not dumb it down, but you know what I mean? Not make it so gnarly and not, or is that just part of what they do?
Dude, it's a tough question. I mean, like in two, like you don't see like what they hit and I feel like it's just maybe the track is deteriorating but these guys are going to like push the envelope on no matter what you give them. So I guess it's just hard to maybe like my two cents would be just maybe trying to put more time into making sure the dangerous spots are a bit safer by cleaning up the track, even though some riders might complain that it's too easy now. But yeah, dude, it's brutal to see like the longevity is just not there right now.
Right.
And like maybe just less rounds even because I mean, dude, we're 17 rounds deep.
Or yeah,
16, whatever the number is, you know, like
it's long. I think it's 16 weeks.
Yes,
yeah, and then right into outdoors.
Yeah,
and then there's these other off series that like some of the guys are on the road all year long.
Yeah, I mean, I get it from a business standpoint. I mean, the more events you create, the more money you create. But at the same time, like you have to realize that you're putting like these guys are gonna max out their heart rates and put themselves through it no matter how many times you give them the opportunity to do it.
Or it's even like, you know, F1 coming out of COVID separated to where they used to almost do back to back. Now they go like, they'll go like 3 weeks on or 2 weeks on and then like a couple weeks off, and it kind of separates the season out. So if you are to have an injury and there's like a 3 week, three week break, it'll save time for injury or whatnot, and you won't have, you know, these riders that go down, and it just gives you more recovery time.
Yeah, and I feel like that's maybe where it needs to be, is just maybe, I don't, because no matter what you do, like, I mean, back when, like, we were seeing a lot of quads happen in Supercross, they tried to prevent that, but people are still getting hurt because now they're going so fast on a basic track, you create the opportunity for injury that way, because now they're overexceeding the track's limit of speed because it's so easy for them.
Yeah.
But then you make it harder, and then they start doing big, sketchy stuff. So, like, they're going to max out whatever they can on the track, no matter what. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, dude, I just feel like maybe just give them a bit more of recovery time, because, like I said, like, you tell them to go, they're going to go.
Yeah.
Like, they're competitors. Yeah. Like, they're not going to not take it easy.
Not just as competitors.
You can, as you can see, like, they're going to put their life on the line and leave it all on the track. So there's no way to stop them from doing that.
Right.
But hopefully, hopefully we can minimize it and just, I think, maybe just recovery, because that's a brutal, brutal schedule for them.
All right, before we finish, Vicky, Danny does this lightning round. It's like quick little shooter answers. And, we appreciate you here at Monster Energy. You're fucking awesome. And, just keep being you.
Dude, thanks for having me. I'm stoked.
Absolute badass. What does the number 423 mean to you?
Well, it actually didn't mean a whole lot. When I raced Supercross, that was the next lowest number. It was 423. I was like, that looks sweet. I'll take that one. But actually, now it's kind of funny because 423 is my boyfriend's birthday.
No way.
I thought it was going to be a date of some sort.
It wasn't at first, but now it's.
You attracted him at the race. He's like, it's a sign. It's a sign. Yep. Did you ever have to kick one of the guys in the nuts to keep him in line?
No, physically, no. With words, probably, yeah.
Mentally, yes. Yeah. favorite trick to throw over a super jump?
The classic whip. It doesn't get old.
Right?
Yeah.
What I love, too, is, like, you guys all have your different styles.
Yeah.
Which is so sick. It's not like one whip is the same. Everyone has their, like, little flavor to it.
Yeah, when we can go just all, like, through a train and just rider after rider, just toss one, it's just, I don't know, it's so cool. Like you said, everything's different. And there's multiple whips now and multiple styles of that same whip. And it's just like, dude, it's endless.
What's the trick to whipping it back?
Hold on for deal.
Is it your torso? Is it like a...
There's timing and finesse, but I mean, yeah, just pretty much just give it a yank and hang on for dear life is for what I do.
Anything with the gas or the brakes or no? That's more for
rotation. there's technique to it for sure. I mean, I like to come in like slow and then give it everything off the ramp, and normally that means I'm not going to touch the landing. That's normally the good indicator of a good whip is not touching a landing at all. So that's normally a good indicator for me is when I just go to flat. But, you just however you can hold on to her backwards and then get comfortable. I mean, like, that's what you see is, like, you got to go backwards to be, like, worthwhile nowadays. So just you got to sit there and stare at the ramp as you left and just see how long you can stare at it for.
In your opinion, who's the most influential freestyle Moto X rider ever?
Oh man, I don't want to like give him credit, but I got to see him all the time, but it's for sure Twitch.
What about most influential racer?
Racer? Oh man, that's tough. I think I would say it's James Stewart. I mean,
wow. I used to love, the thing about James, I used to love watching him ride is because he'd fucking just pin it and he's either going to win or go down the blaze of glory.
Like I watch like old school like footage of like him or just like that era and like just, I don't know, like he could just turn it on. And like I think like now our today's era, I would honestly say like Herlings.
Yeah.
Herlings is just that guy. Like, I remember watching, like, an interview, and he's like, I looked up at the clock, and it said 10 minutes. He's like, all right, I can push for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he pushes as hard as he can and goes all the way to the front and, like, wins by a minute. And then, like, how do you just turn on that much speed? Like, I'm already going as fast as I can possibly go. And I just, like, I never looked at the clock and be like, okay, I can push and go, like, 5 seconds a lap faster. Like, it's never happened.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one last one for you. Besides moto, what is the second most dangerous sport you participate in?
I participate in? Probably just life. I'm super uncoordinated.
The game of life.
So the next kind of sport I do is life.
Just surviving outside of it.
That's a great answer, because I fucking agree with you.
Yeah. Hey, life is not easy. When you're in mindset of, like, whatever, you know, you specialize in or you're talented on, it gets easier, but life is the one where you got to make sense out of it.
Yeah, no, dude. Like I said, I'm so uncoordinated. It's like Jeremy has golf. Some people go ride BMX for fun. Yeah, I just I try and survive till the next time I can get on my dirt bike, because I'm like, yeah, just so uncoordinated with life.
Love it. That's a wrap. Thank you, Vicky Golden.
Thank you.
Too easy.